This podcast is a presentation of University of California Television. Like what you hear? Consider making a donation at uctv.tv/donate so we can continue to bring you more great programs.
So ADT is androgen deprivation therapy. And hopefully this is review for many of you, but I find it never hurts to review it. So, and we do it at the beginning because it ends up being an important part of treatment, probably for every stage of prostate cancer, increasingly so. So prostate cancer cells, wherever they're found in the body, and I put a white blob around it, doesn't matter if they're in the prostate or in the lymph nodes or the bone or the tip of your nose, they're all prostate cancer cells, and they all behave well the same way. They depend on the male hormone testosterone to survive and grow. The male hormone testosterone is produced by two glands, or two sets of glands. The testicles provide 85% of the total testosterone pool. The adrenal glands, which normally are involved in balancing minerals and fluids in your body, on the side, they've got a moonlighting job. And their moonlighting job is to make a little bit of testosterone, 15% of the total pool. So as far as the testicular testosterone is produced, we know that it is stimulated by a sequence of hormones produced by two glands that are at the base of the brain, the hypothalamus and pituitary. And there's just a cascade of signals that gets to the testicle and says, guys, wake up, make testosterone. And it's that male hormone testosterone that really makes the prostate cancer grow. The yellow arrow from the testes is intentionally larger than the yellow arrow from the adrenal glands, because that's where the bulk of the testosterone is coming from. So in the 1940s and 50s, a man named Charles Huggins, who's a urologist at the University of Chicago, discovered that getting rid of testicular testosterone led to significant regression of prostate cancer. And it was such an important observation, we still do it today. He won a Nobel Prize for that observation. It turns out that eliminating testosterone can be done in a number of different ways. The way Dr. Huggins did it was to surgically remove the testicles. But that was then, that's not now. We don't need to be doing that now. What we now need to do is simply use a drug that, where the pink X is, blocks the signal between hypothalamus and pituitary, prevents that signal from getting through, so the signal never gets to the testicles and the testicles stop producing testosterone. And this is very, very effective. Turns out there's a number of agents that do this. These are listed here. There's probably more generics along the way, but this is easily accomplished with any of these agents. While the efficacy of these agents is absolutely the same, there's no advantage of one over another. They all work equally well. They have slight differences, and there are different circumstances in which they might be used. I'm going to show these to you. So the first, how it's given, leuprolide. The most common formulation is Lupron, but there are others. Is an intramuscular shot in your tush, in your rear end. Goserelin or Zoladex is a subcutaneous pellet that's done under the skin. Degarelix is a shot that can be given subcutaneously. And Relugolix is a pill, which is the latest addition to the armamentarium. And we'll talk about pros and cons in a sec. How often? The beauty of leuprolide is that it can be given as a one-month, three-month, four-month, or six-month injection. So it gives you lots of flexibility. It's a depot formulation, so it's not like you're getting extra more side effects. It just gets released over the longer time period. We tend to use three-month shots because that seems to sort of, on the one hand, it's not so often that it's burdensome. On the other hand, it allows us a little flexibility to stop and start as need be. But they really are all quite equivalent. We certainly have patients who prefer one-month shots just because they want to be seen once a month and are here, and that's fine. But every 3 months is fine as well. The Zoladex, the Goserelin, is either a 1 or 3 month injection. The Degarelix, unfortunately, is only available as a monthly injection. It's subcutaneous, and I'll show you some pros and cons of it. And the Relugolix is a pill. So the pros of that is that you don't have to get a shot. The cons of that is that you have to take a pill every day. So it just depends what your preference is. In terms of concurrent therapy, typically when we give a drug like leuprolide or goserelin, won't bore you with the details, but the first thing that we see is a little bump in testosterone. It's called a testosterone flare, and you have to protect against that so that cancer cells aren't stimulated. And that generally requires a month's worth of an oral medication like Casodex. By contrast, Degarelix and Relugolix do not cause that bump or flare, so you can completely avoid the Casodex. So six of one, half dozen of another. In terms of one of the observations that has been made is that the latter two, Degarelix and Relugolix, Degarelix is sold as Firmagon, Relugolix is sold as Orgovyx. There is a indirect sense that it will reduce coronary artery complications in patients with coronary artery disease. If you don't have coronary artery disease, it really has no impact on the likelihood of secondary coronary artery events. So in general, certainly if that's an issue, we will be using one of these approaches. There's a sense that maybe one of these, Relugolix or Degarelix, have less side effects than the other pills. I actually am not convinced of that. I don't think the data really supports that, because the side effects that you get from these medications are not from the medicines. It's from a low testosterone level. And they all drop testosterone level the exact same way. So that generally is not a reason to choose one over another. But certainly the coronary artery disease is a very important consideration. And then lastly, the Degarelix, the Firmagon. Has anyone in the audience gotten the Firmagon shot? A couple people. For some people, it hurts like the dickens. It just hurts a lot. Not everyone. It can cause a welt that goes under the skin, and it can be painful. So you just have to be aware of it. It goes away. It's not incapacitating pain, but we have to be very conscious of warning you ahead of time that, hey, listen, it's likely you're going to get a welt. It's likely that it might help hurt a little bit. But it's a very useful medicine when you want to start right away, because you don't have to get on the Casodex and so forth. Similarly, the Relugolix, the Orgovyx, are pills. So it's rapid onset and also rapid offset. So you can start and stop relatively quickly. The only issue with Orgovyx that I always warn people about is it's a pill, so there may be a significant copay for it, depending on your insurance. If you have Medicare, it's generally covered, but it is very expensive. And so it's just something to look at. Whenever we prescribe any medication at UCSF, we go through our specialty pharmacy that always does an insurance check for us. So you're protected that way, but it's just worth being aware of. All right. So we've talked about the testicular testosterone. It turns out that the adrenal testosterone can also be blocked. And it can be blocked either by targeting the uptake of the cancer into the prostate cancer cells, and that's what that big pink bar means, that just prevents the drugs being absorbed into the prostate cancer. There's six on the market. The first three are sort of the first generation ones that work, but not as well. And the latter three, Xtandi, Erleada, and Nubeqa, are drugs that are the next generation, if you will, and are more effective. The other approach, is, instead of blocking the uptake of the testosterone into the prostate cancer cells, you just stop it being produced by the adrenal glands. And that's what a drug called abiraterone or Zytiga does. Abiraterone, by the way, and apalutamide were drugs developed at UCSF. Their early trials were done in our program. These drugs as a class. So enzalutamide, apalutamide, darolutamide, and abiraterone, you will hear referenced as androgen signaling inhibitors, ASIs, or RCs, androgen receptor signaling inhibitors. So if you hear about an RC, it's one of these second agents that naproxen is. There's pros and cons to all of these agents, depending on the setting in which they're used, and other medical conditions that will arise. I'm not going to talk about them in great detail, but they are all perfectly reasonable. At UCSF, on the medical oncology side, when we're going to use one of these, we tend to start with abiraterone and Zytiga, because if it stops working at some point in the future, we're going to be on it long term. Then one of the secondary blockers has reasonable efficacy, the 40 to 50% range. Whereas if you flip that and you start with one of the blockers and then try to come back with abiraterone, it only works 3 or 4% of the time. So given a choice, it gives us a little bit in the way of extra options down the line. But by and large, I think it's very fair to say that these drugs are, for all intents and purposes, equivalent. So historically, what we used to do is we would, I guess the pointer on this doesn't work, is we would block the testicular production of testosterone, treatment number one. And when it stopped working, we'd move on to treatment number two, which is one of these blockers, one of the ASIs, RCs. But it was subsequently observed that instead of going treatment one followed by treatment two, and you'll be hearing more about this afternoon, that treatment one plus treatment two at the same time works better. And that treatment one plus treatment two, you will hear referenced as ADT, androgen deprivation therapy, intensification. I prefer to use the term augmentation because it's not that intense. But that doubling up, treatment one plus treatment two, has become the standard in many, not all, circumstances. And I'm going to show you a slide that shows you how we measure this. So compared to ADT alone, ADT intensification prolongs life in men with newly diagnosed metastatic disease and in selected patients who are going to get radiation therapy. So it has really become the standard, not just to use ADT, but to add to it. And that really should be almost always the default. In lower risk patients that are getting lower amounts of hormones with radiation, it's not necessary. So it's only in selected patients. So you've already seen a curve like this, but I wanted to, because you'll be seeing them throughout the day, I wanted to take 2 minutes, less 1 minute, to describe to you what a Kaplan-Meier curve is. That's what this curve is called. The Kaplan-Meier curve is a way of describing events over time. That's all. And it's the probability of those events based on the data that you follow in patients. And so the way, I'll show you the details in just a second of what this curve shows, but the way these curves are set up is on the x-axis horizontally, it's just time from the start of your treatment. So from 0 months here out to 66 months. On the y-axis, on the vertical axis, is a percentage of patients who have had an event or haven't had an event. In this case, it tells you the percentage of patients who are alive. So you start at 100%. And over time, things happen and survival decreases. And I want to point out that oftentimes curves like this include, unless otherwise specified, survival for all causes. So if there's someone on this one of these curves who got hit by a bolt of lightning, he's represented. So it's not just prostate cancer. You can have prostate cancer specific survival curves, but then it wouldn't say overall survival on the left, it would say prostate cancer specific survival. And so if you look at the white line, what you see is that in patients who are treated with androgen deprivation therapy alone, plus a placebo, over time declines You see it going down, down, down. And the way we measure it, the standard measure, is you look, and Dr. Agarwal will talk about this a little bit more as well, but the measure that the FDA, that everyone is looking at for drug approval, is what is the proportion that when you have 50% of patients who have experienced an event, whether the event is survival, or metastasis, or whatever, how long does it take you to get that 50% mark? And so here you can see that on the white line, if you dotted the white line picks out 50%, you can see that it's 36 months, which gives you the quote unquote median event rate, median in this case, survival, overall survival. And so the way we look at efficacy of a drug is we say, well, now we're going to do a randomized trial in which we take 1,000 patients and 500 of them get ADP and we give them a placebo, and 500 of them get ADP and they get AA's abiraterone. This is the original study that demonstrated the efficacy of abiraterone. And by the way, it doesn't have to be a placebo. It could be standard of care. So you get the standard of care, 36.5 months is the average survival, median survival. Whereas now the yellow curve shows you that the average survival is pushed out to 53 months. And so what we look for is a separation of the curves. The more the curves are separated, the more the impact. The less they're separated, the less of the impact. And the difference in that separation is generally referred by what's called the p-value, which just gives you the statistical significance of the separation. Dr. Agarwal will talk to you later about the hazard ratio and what that means. So this is the way you'll see Kaplan-Meier curves shown to you. Dr. Kruperwick showed you a curve. It was reversed. It was not the curves were going up. I think it was for
like this
right. So, but same, it's exact same principle. It's likelihood of an event over time. That's how you interpret these. And you just want to be able to separate them. We were all taught, you know, you want to be able to drive a Mack truck between the two curves, not have a little mosquito flying through it, because that's not significant. Okay. So in this particular study, back before abiraterone Zytiga was approved, and it's the first of the drugs to be approved, we asked the question, well, if we do treatment one plus treatment two together, the yellow line, versus treatment one followed by treatment two later, the white line, is there a difference? You can drive a Mack truck through. That's pretty healthy, right? You've gone from a median survival of 36 to 53 months. FDA approved the drug on this basis. And I think most people agree, that looks pretty good. Okay, so now everyone knows how to read Kaplan-Meier curves for the rest of the day. So, androgen deprivation therapy synergizes radiation to improve outcomes in selected patients. You'll hear about that. It prolongs time to metastases in some men with a climbing PSA after local therapy. It reduces pain and improves quality of life. It prolongs life, I just showed you. And ADT intensification is a take home. You'll hear more about it. It's important in newly diagnosed metastatic disease. Now, if ADT is so wonderful, why don't we put it in the drinking water? Well, you'll hear later that besides the fact that it's not water soluble, it creates side effects. And there's a whole session on symptom management this afternoon where you'll be hearing about a lot of these. And we always have to be conscious about them. I'm not going to talk about them in detail now, except that as we use ADT, we're always thinking about this balance between benefits and side effects. So we can either reduce side effects for people who have less extensive disease, treatment de-intensification, or we maximize benefits in people who have higher or more extensive disease. And that's the principle of augmented or intensified ADT. I'm going to skip this in the interest of time. So the questions to be asking yourself always with ADT, is it needed at all? What's the best timing? What's the duration? And what's the intensity? And this is, as always, an important part of shared decision making. But these are fair questions to be asking your physician. Again, this afternoon, Dr. Rabel will be leading a session on symptom management of many of these side effects, so we won't touch base on it. But it is something very, very important, and we don't just always get the treatment. We have to think of the calculus, which you can see.
You've been listening to a podcast by University of California Television. For more information about this program or UCTV, visit us online at uctv.tv.